Within 24 hours, we had an event where people came, stayed, we gave them food, they camped with us, and they cleaned up the forest. And we turned it into a celebratory event instead of like the self-sacrifice event, which wasn't working till now. And that spin actually worked. And the press wrote about us extensively because of us throwing a party around picking up garbage. And at that point, we realized people have very limited time to give to the world. You know, they have like 1.5 days on the weekend, which they'd rather Netflix and chill. They'd rather just take it easy. You can't blame them. You know, it's a rat race. So, but if you add a social and a fun element to any community ecological event, people are willing to participate. They're willing to combine their fun time with a giving time, with a regenerative time, and they're willing to participate. So that was the big learning there. And that's where the big momentum came.
That was right from the middle of this week's episode, where our guest shares the story of getting people involved in the process of regenerative thinking. And yes, with a lot of fun involved. Hello and a warm welcome to yet another episode of the Mission Chunya podcast. First, as we hit reset and move into the new norm, hope you are doing good and feeling rejuvenated. Second, for all the positive momentum the Mission Chunya movement gains every week through the podcast or follow-up actions from around the world, I owe you a big thank you. Thanks for the support and I hope you continue the patronage. Stories, inspiring and motivating stories, is something that I consciously try to get on the podcast from time to time. And this episode is no different. Today's guest, a former journalist and content creator, is someone who advocates a concept that is very niche, a different school of thought, if I could put it that way. But before I could tell more, let's hear straight from our guest. Who is?
Hi, my name is Jacob Cherian. I am the director and founder of TerraGeneration.com, or website is gobeyondsustainability.com.
Can you begin by giving the listeners a background about what you do and what's your motivation in this space?
What we do on a day-to-day basis is we run events like cleanups and tree planting drives to build community, to encourage people to engage with being environmentally positive on an individual personal level, because I believe that's where the fundamental change comes when you're thinking about it at a individual level, where it is where people participate and learn by doing. So that is a large part of what we do, is running cleanups and tree planting drives. It started because we, as volunteers, were doing this. About 4 years ago, we started, and out of Kodaikanal, where I have my house on top of a mountain, and we started cleaning up that forest there, and people joined us. And about 2 years ago, 2018, we held something called a plogging party, where we threw a party around cleanups on the mountaintop in Kodaikanal. And since then, we've gone on to do almost 50 cleanups in 10 cities in India, and with over 5,000 volunteers in the past 2 years. So it scaled up because we started adding a fun element. So that's a large part of what we do on a day-to-day basis. But what keeps the cash flow going is creating content for environmentally positive organizations like NGOs and startups. And these are the two parts of what we do, events and content right now.
That's a good short summary of what you are doing, Jacob. But what was your background? I'm sure this is just the last few years, but what was your background until you started this?
Well, as a skill set background, I'm a content creator, started out as a journalist, wrote for the Economic Times at one point. We wrote about technology and startups, venture capital at some point, and this inspired me to move on to a series of media startups, but as an employee. And after crossing the level of editor, I saw myself plateauing in my career. So I went and got an MBA, which took me to Shanghai, took me to San Francisco, came back, and I created this digital media agency called Modern Media. And we ended up with clients from across the world. And again, we have reapplied the content creation skills. I reapplied the content creation skills as of being a journalist and an editor to being a creative director. And this is what eventually led me to Kodaikanal, where I bought a house there. So that's the background at a skill set level. But when you ask me for background for environmental level, it's just a proactive on-ground environmentalist really started about five to four years ago from Kodaikanal, where we're living at the absolute edge of a forest and low-impact lives. And that's where we really realized how we can, my wife and I, how we can actually be positively impacting the environment. And that's how the journey of this company started.
So how did the idea of like regenerative thinking come about?
Yeah, so living low-impact lives on a hillside, we saw that no matter how much of reusable cloth bags and, you know, reusable bottles and composting we used, we had to take extra effort to fix, for instance, trash lying around in the forest, right? It wasn't a sustainable activity. It felt like we were doing a lot more than sustainability by cleaning up that forest. That's where it started. And so people started describing me as the sustainability guy, but I realized that, you know, I was always a sustainability guy, always used reusable bags, always used reusable bottles and all these small things that, you know, individuals do, use public transport where we can. But I had to look for a word that said something larger when we go beyond just sustainability. And that's where I came across the word regenerative. It's quite common in farming. You hear it in architecture. And as I started deep diving into this idea of being regenerative, which is positive impact, I saw that a whole lifestyle and possibly a business can be built around this idea.
That's an interesting thing. And you also explained that in detail in your platforms, that your intent is to go beyond the theme of sustainability. Why did you think that everyone has to go beyond sustainability? I understand when I talk to a lot of people generally say like, oh, sustainability and sustainable development has become a lot of cliched words these days.
Yeah.
Was it the same kind of feeling that you had?
I don't think it's a cliched word. I think it's a great word because it describes the ideal world. A sustainable world is the ideal world, right? It is what we need to achieve. But to get there, I believe we need regenerative action to get to sustainability, right? So we talked about this earlier. Let me just give you an analogy of how I try to describe it to people. So let's say you're trying to lose weight, right? You cannot simply match your calorie intake with your calorie spend, right? You're not going to lose weight. You're just going to always be at that same overweight if you're matching intake and spend. But you need to be spending more than you intake, right? And so when you match spend, calorie spend, that is sustainable. But when you are spending more than you consume, that is regenerative. So that's an analogy, right? Or another one, that a popular analogy that I use is if someone was drowning, they cannot use the same amount of energy as when they're swimming to survive. Instead, they need to put a little extra energy to come back to the surface and stabilize, right? So that extra energy spent is regenerative effort. And once you stay once you come afloat, that minimum energy is sustainability. So what I'm saying is the ecosystem right now does not support a sustainable lifestyle, right? Right now. I mean, any sustainable effort in one part of our lives is negated by another part of our life, which is very integral. For instance, you know, we can be vegetarian, but at some point you need to fly. We can take public transport, but at some point you will have to use some sort of disposable healthcare product, which is made of plastic, will not biodegrade for 500 years. You know, you can carry all the reusable water bottles and bags, but at some point you will have to own a laptop, which will have some lithium or whatever rare earth mineral from, you know, which was probably mined from under some forest. Again, so this ecosystem doesn't allow us to be sustainable right now. So therefore, we need to constantly overcompensate these violations of sustainability by being regenerative. So the current actions for sustainable is not enough. And I'm asking people to spend a little more time, money, or network to help be regenerative. And these are the three ways anybody or any organization can be regenerative. Time, money, network.
Before we get to the three methods in detail of how you get organizations and people to be sustainable, what are the projects that you started off in Kodaikanal? You did mention that you started probably by cleaning the places around. So what kind of momentum did you get in Kodaikanal, and how did you move back to a city, and how did you carry forward that momentum?
While in Kodaikanal, there wasn't much momentum. Across 2 years, we had about 20 volunteers join us. It was a really, really slow start. We created a few different kinds of campaigns, you know, the local community that lives there, where it was clean up your hills. There were trekkers coming. And so it was like happy hills, a clean hills, take this bag. And we'd make these posters where we'd give out bags for people to pick up trash in the forest when they went for their treks, and they bring it back. And we'd give them free chai or something like that, or a free slice of cake. But it didn't attract much momentum, as you would say. Until, just as a joke, I made a Facebook post on Facebook, and it was about, let's throw a party about cleaning up. And we got so much positive response. I said, wow, there might be something here. And so within 24 hours, I contacted this startup that called Camp Monk. Camp Monk encourages people to go outside. They're friends of mine. So I also believe people need to spend more time outside. So I contacted my friends at Camp Monk, and they helped me set up this event. Within 24 hours, we had an event where people came, stayed. We gave them food. They camped with us, and they cleaned up the forest. And we turned it into a celebratory event instead of like the self-sacrifice event, which wasn't working till now. And that spin actually worked. And the press wrote about us extensively because of us throwing a party around picking up garbage. And at that point, we realized people have very limited time to give to the world. You know, they have like 1.5 days on the weekend, which they'd rather Netflix and chill. They'd rather just take it easy. You can't blame them. You know, it's a rat race. So, but if you add a social and a fun element to any community ecological event, people are willing to participate. They're willing to combine their fun time with a giving time, with a regenerative time, and they're willing to participate. So that was the big learning there. And that's where the big momentum came. And then I took that model to Kotagiri, Kunnur, other hill stations, you know, in Tamil Nadu. And like that, we ended up going to different towns and different cities, Bombay, Chennai, Sakleshpur, Mysore, where there were 250 people as part of the cleanup, including the mayor of Mysore. So that momentum, it took off from there. As soon as we added food, music, and if you have a sponsor, sometimes even beer, where we'll take the people out for a free beer sponsored by one of our generous sponsors. So yeah, it's been that combination of fun with giving back to the world is an extremely important part of what we learned.
I mean, beer is definitely an added motivation for anyone to get off their couch on a weekend and join you on this. I clearly see that at this point, you kind of used your experience in media and your master's degree and a business sense to kind of see, like, get people involved, make it an attractive value proposition, and show a better picture and get people involved. So that's an interesting story. Now, how did you take this? How do you take this kind of learning to people and organizations, and how do you empower them to adopt regenerative thinking practices and go beyond the sustainability theme? How do you do that?
Firstly, the process of participating is really important, where it becomes an individual activity where people at cleanups have said, oh my God, I have thrown so many cigarette butts on the ground. It is so difficult to, you know, the smaller the item, the harder it is to pick up, because the value of bending over and picking up the edge of a gutkha packet, or, you know, the edge of a chips packet, you know, that corner, which some animal is probably going to eat, that the payoff of bending over and picking up something so small is extremely painful. And which gets people to think about how their smallest actions actually have large damage implications. So we've had people like, oh my God, I have used so many diapers for my child. Because diapers is one of the biggest things we pick up, because it's non-biodegradable. It's got enough of organic matter in there for it to become a methane bomb. So people participate that way. So that's at the individual level that helps the cleanups. But from this, you know, because of my content and MBA training, like, I've been able to structure this learnings into quote-unquote frameworks, right? So can we think about our life in different compartments? And we've broken down life into 12 different compartments of consumption and waste, right? And we're like, if you think about life in these compartments, it becomes actually quite easy to solve your individual impact, okay? And individual impact is extremely important for collective impact. For instance, the personal triangle is the first compartment, right? Space between home, office, and the high street, right? And this is like the triangle almost all of us live, right? We go from home to office and maybe a gym or a yoga class or futsal or a bar or a coffee shop or the local chai shop, whatever. This is our triangle of all our lives. And in this space, there are five products that we use the most as single use. And it's the plate, it's the bottle, cup, cutlery, straw, and a bag. These five things, if you're probably going to use at least one or two of these per day. Now, across 5 years, that easily crosses 3,000 pieces to 5,000 pieces of disposables that you can completely eliminate from your life. So it's about getting people to think about their little compartments of life. The next compartment is your bathroom, your toilet. You know, can you switch to a bamboo toothbrush, less chemical cleaners? You know, we still not figure out completely chemical-free cleaning agents yet that are highly effective. So I'd say less to be realistic. Your office. So when you start thinking about compartmentalizing your life, it becomes a lot easier to make change at the individual level and organizational level. So these sort of frameworks are presented. We discuss about how people can make their realistic changes, because more often than not, the demands of a sustainable life is scary. People don't want to make that shift because it means changing a lot of convenience, taking a lot of convenience of their lives. And their lives are so integrated with convenience that it's scary. So how do you be realistic about these changes? And these looking at life in compartments helps them. So that's a really important part of what we do. And finally, just destroying the myth that everything is recyclable. You know, taking people through the journey of where their plastic bottle or diaper goes to, the idea of multi-layer packaging. These are things we learned the hard way, you know, when we try to take things to recycling centers. We realize that almost everything that we're picking up, like the number is actually one bag out of 25 bags is recyclable. 24 bags is usually not recyclable at cleanups, right? Because it's usually multi-layer packaging. It's things that the people who pick up waste, they don't want to even touch. That's usually the kind of things we're picking up. So it's about identifying things that are not recyclable at all. Can we not eat so much chewing gum? Can we swap out chips packets with fruit? These are small things that people don't really think about. They just believe that someone has figured out how to recycle all of it. So destroying the myth that everything is recyclable. And how do we do that? We trace the story of why is it so trendy to talk about plastic suddenly? We can narrow it down to one geopolitical event, which happened in Jan 2018. We can narrow it down to there and say like, okay, this is why suddenly it's not just trendy. It's a real problem that the world cannot solve. It's because not everything's recyclable. Can you wash your jars before you throw them out? Can you wash your Swiggies and Zomato food packaging before you throw it out? You know, because clean waste, the waste has to be clean to be recycled, even if it is so. So taking them through that journey is a big part of what we do in our workshops.
Those are really good. I'm sure having such frameworks, again, reemphasizes the point, and it's easy for people to relate. Again, it goes back to a similar business school analogy that what can't be measured can't be achieved. So you need to have measurable targets so that you define them and then set to want to achieve. The other thing I just want to ask you is that the Jan 2018 story that you're mentioning is it the story of US waste not being permitted to enter China for recycling? Is it the same story?
Absolutely. It's the story of Operation National Sword.
Yeah, for all the listeners, just a recap. So US typically generally sends out materials for recycling to China. China is the largest importer for recycling. But in 2018, they had a new legislation that said, like, unless the waste is clearly segregated, we will not recycle. And one big example that they gave was all the peanut butter jars. If the peanut butter jars contain traces of peanut butter inside them, the jars are not going to be accepted. So that was in the news. And that's a good story to highlight as well, because people generally don't relate to the minor details.
Yeah, so more precisely, it's about contamination levels have to be under 5%. Yeah, the waste had to be a contamination of under 5%, because contamination levels were at 30%, and you know, which is unrealistic, because then it puts the pressure on the recycler to use water to clean out the waste and then recycle it. Extremely unsustainable way of recycling. So cleaning and segregating at source is extremely important, and China put the pressure back on, well, the Western world, not just the US, it's just the Western world in general, about making sure their waste is clean before they throw it out. And I think it was a good move, personally, because people, individuals and countries need to take responsibility for cleaning and segregating and using less at source. And it was a big move, and it's forced the whole world to scramble to think about alternatives and, you know, build out a real community out of that one geopolitical event.
Jacob, you do have these interesting frameworks, interesting themes that you take it to people. So what are the projects that you're currently doing, and how are you getting people involved in them?
So we had a few cleanups and tree planting drives that were scheduled for the next 3 months with a major airline, international sports brand of runners, a building, a real estate agency for tree planting drives. But all ground on-ground events have been put on pause. But thankfully, the content wing of what we do is still functional, because everybody's gone online. So if anything, there's more demand for content than ever right now. So I'd like to just spend some time on what we do content-wise. For instance, one of the clients that we provide content for is the Foundation for Ecological Security, FES, based out of Anand. They are a large NGO that has a 5-year goal of reclaiming 30 million acres, restoring 30 million acres of commons, right? Are you familiar with the term commons, Girish?
Yes, I am. But it'll be good if you can just give a brief background for the other people.
So commons is best known via the inverse problem of it, which is the tragedy of the commons, which is it's land, water, air that belongs to all of us. So it's easy to understand commons through the tragedy of commons, right? And a very popular online video explains the tragedy of commons as, imagine there's a single pond out of which there are 4 fishermen that fish one fish every day to feed their family, right? And that is the absolute sustainable level of fishing from that pond, like one fish per day, because that leaves enough fish in the pond to bounce back. The population stays at its equilibrium. But now if one of the fishermen takes 2 fish per day, now suddenly the fish population will start declining, because there's not enough fish to repopulate, to regenerate itself. But now this one person gains more profit than the collective loss of the other 3. So now this one person is getting more profit than the collective loss of the other 3. And this is the tragedy of the commons. And now if you actually look at it, the world is filled with this case. And a lot of people and organizations are violating the commons. People are encroaching public property. People are taking water from rivers which belong to everybody. There's more borewells out there than ever before. These are instances of violating the commons. And so the Foundation for Ecological Security their 5-year goal, based on their on-ground work and their content, is to help reclaim, restore 30 million acres, which is about almost 4 to 5% of India's surface area. It's a really large goal. So what my job in this large project is, Terra Generation's role is to mainstream the word commons. Can we distribute the vocabulary for the word commons? Can we make it part of common language? Because people understand this concept, because it's intuitive in some way, but they don't have a word for it. And its vocabulary is extremely important in bringing community together towards a certain cause. And so that's my role. It's about mainstreaming the word commons, which is a really interesting project. Very happy with what I do there. So that is one of the content projects that are live right now. Another is with jhatka.org. It's an online platform. And we've had problems recently because of the COVID-19 situation, where they're an online digital advocacy platform, working mainly in the space of air pollution and gender and sexuality. I personally focus on air pollution. It's my role to get people off the internet and on the ground to participate and engage with communities and decision makers for systemic change in the long run. For instance, with the air pollution, we're working towards asking decision makers for switching over to electric buses, less dependency on thermal power, and so on. Again, it's a content and events strategy there, service that we provide there. Now we're primarily content because of what's happening around.
That's interesting. A lot of your projects are, almost all your projects are on-ground projects. No one can just sit at home and sit in the couch and probably say, like, I'm doing something for sustainability. So that's very interesting. And a lot of them are really interesting, hands-on, and yeah, pretty good. On a similar lines, I also heard that you're also developing some products. I understand that it's at a very initial stage, but would you like to share some ideas about the thought behind it?
So based on the 12 compartments of life that I was talking about earlier, we created products for each of these compartments to help people make easy transitions, like simpler and enjoyable transitions to a sustainable and regenerative lifestyle. And for instance, the first product combines the big five of disposable plastic, which is the bottle, the cup, cutlery, straw, and the bag. We combined it into a single product. It's based on 24 guidelines, which make it, we believe, the perfect product. Now, it's not in the initial stages. Actually, we've been working on this for over 2 years. But product building is so resource intensive that we ran out of money last year at some point. And we had to make a strong decision internally to slow down allocation of resources to product development. So we pushed that to the back burner. It's in slow development stage now. While we focus on our goal of creating a community of 100,000 active environmentalists through our content. So that's the story of the product, where it's not actually initial stage. It's just that we had 2 years of intensive work in that. But when we ran out of money, we had to pause that till we, get some more money through the door. Yeah. So that's the story of the first product in a line of 12 that we have designed.
I mean, it's a valid reason. A lot of entrepreneurs, startup founders kind of go through this cycle, and it's just justified. I'm sure people can keep track of your activities on the social media channels to know more about this.
Yes, absolutely.
How can someone who's really interested to work on this, interested in the frameworks, how can they get in touch, and how do you plan to scale up your activities going forward so that people can join you in this?
Well, we can be, you can follow our Instagram page, Terra Generation, T-E-R-R-E Generation, like regeneration. So Terra Generation on Instagram. Our website is terrageneration.com or gobeyondsustainability.com. You can follow us, you can check out our website at gobeyondsustainability.com. So these are the two online platforms that we have right now, and we can be, you can keep track of what we do. Our events will be updated there. You can see some previews to the product on the website as well. We're crowdfunding for the product so that we can have more money in the product department. So if you believe in us and you're willing to pledge up to 2,000 rupees for the first product, we would appreciate that. And you can be sure that we'll be doing our best to get you that product. So yeah, thank you for that opportunity, Girish.
Thanks, Jacob. I will definitely put the links in the show notes section of the podcast and also put it on the social media channel so that people who want to know more about your work and also contribute to the cause, they will get in touch with you directly. So it's an interesting story. A lot of new concepts have come up through this conversation. Thanks for taking time and joining me on the podcast.
I just want to leave with one last note, which is to think about how you can give 1 hour back to the larger collective good, to the commons, beyond the self. Just 1 hour per week. That's just one episode of Game of Thrones or two episodes of some comedy sitcom. So just think about 1 hour per week that you can give back to. And that's really all I want to leave you on with that note. Thank you, Kirish.
So yes, the conversation ended with a key takeaway. Identify something, a task, or an activity in your weekly schedule where your actions can have a positive impact on the planet. Just 1 hour every week. Now on to this week's action item towards Mission Shunya. Well, Jacob signed off on a good note by asking us to contribute 1 hour per week. But I wanted to know more on how we can get into the regenerative mode of thinking. So this is what he had to say.
So there are three broad ways, and there are probably thousands, if not millions of ways to be regenerative, but there are three high-level ways anybody or any organization can participate. One is to give regenerative time. Can you give time at a base level? Can you participate in cleanups with physical labor? Like, you know, hands. We need absolute hands sometimes because some things just need base skills. So cleanups, tree planting drives, whatever. Can you participate at a base level or at a high level? Right? Can you help to, you know, we need numbers, people who are good with numbers. The movement needs people, not just us, just the movement in general. It needs people who can shoot video, create content. It needs people to perform at an event, you know, to make it fun. So that's, can you give regenerative time to the movement? Second, can you give a regenerative premium? Can you pay money to organizations who will, if you are too busy, can you give money to organizations or individuals who are doing the work on your behalf? So can you find sustainable companies around you that are selling products that have a positive impact and buy their products particularly? You'll be paying a premium, which is because it's not going to be a price based on existing market dynamics. It's going to be a premium that you're going to be paid for, but you can contribute with a regenerative premium. The third way is by giving regenerative network. And I believe Mission Shunya is one of those people because you have a day job as well, if I'm not wrong, Girish, and you do this on top of that. Am I right?
Yes, I do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you unknowingly, clearly you are giving regenerative network where you are taking information and amplifying it across a niche network. And so there's people like you, or it could just be at an individual, make sure you're sharing content of other people who are doing the work. If you're not doing the work, at least share the news with your own networks, because even if 100 people in your network see it, you're helping grow the movement. So in summary, three ways: give regenerative time, regenerative premium, or regenerative network. Three ways you can participate, but do something, you have to participate.
And again, time, premium, and network is all that you need to get started with this. And you heard it right. By listening to the Mission Shunya podcast, sharing it to more people, you're already doing your bit by default. To make it a deliberate action, please do consider writing a review for the show on any social media platform and amplify the voice. You can find Mission Shunya and tag it in the post. The handle is @MissionShunya across the social media channels. Links to connect with Jacob are in the show notes section of the podcast and also on the podcast episode page on the website missionshunya.com. 2 weeks from now, I will be back with yet another podcast episode. Until then, signing off, this is Girish Shivakumar and thank you for listening.